I will explain in a second what a QRS complex is. This is the work of my former student, Alexei Sandrihaila, who graduated in 2010, and he would have loved to present this work, but he became a father last week, and I let that count as an excuse. So he's co-advised by my collaborator, Jelena Kovacevic, both from Carnegie Mellon University, and I also was at Carnegie Mellon, and I recently moved to ETH Zurich. So the work is concerned with ECG signals, so electrocardiogram signals, and here's an example of a measured ECG signal from some database. So you see it's a periodic repetition of sort of elements that repeat each other but with slight variations. And so if you take out one period, then in textbooks it's typically described like this. So this is an idealistic representation of that period. And the cardiologists, they divide this into pieces, which you see here. There's a PR interval and an ST interval. And in the middle, the one that contains the peak, that's the QRS interval or QRS complex. So here I repeat it. And the middle part, that's the QRS complex or QRS interval. And that's what we are concerned with. And here is sort of an extracted version of it because here it's kind of a bit squished. So this is roughly how it looks like. And it turns out, as you know, cardiologists tell us, this is the most important part of this signal, and it's used for a variety of purposes and in diagnostics. So cardiologists look at this part to determine whether there are any problems with the heart rhythm or to detect certain diseases. So a typical duration of that part is 100 milliseconds, so a tenth of a second, and you know. You may imagine many ECG signals are recorded and they're stored in a database, and if you have millions of patients and many, many seconds, then this amounts to a huge amount of data. So that's why people have started to study the problem of compressing these QRS complexes, because you want to store it, but you want to reduce the amount of data that it takes. So of course, when you start compressing it, you introduce an error, and you don't want the error to be so large that the diagnostics doesn't work anymore. And so our goal is in essence, what we have been doing is present a method to compress the QRS complex while maintaining sufficient quality. There's been prior work on this problem because it's relevant, and there was some early work by Cernmo and others from 81, and they compressed the QRS complex by extracting certain features, and that way they reduced the dimensionality. Then later, this work was subsumed by this line of work, which used Hermite functions to describe these QRS complexes. In essence, taking that part of the taking the QRS complex and expanding it as a linear combination of Hermite function. And the reason why Hermite function came into play was not some deep mathematical theory that says, "Oh, Hermite functions are just the functions you want to use here." It was just because of the similarity in shape. It's just that Hermite functions somehow have look similar than as a QRS complex, and that's why people started doing that. So our approach also is continuous this line of work, and meaning we take the QRS complex and we expand it into a basis of discrete Hermite functions. And this is somewhat different than the prior work, and I will explain how. So first, some background what a Hermite function is. To understand Hermite function, we first have to look at the close cousin, the Hermite polynomial. So Hermite polynomials is a sequence of polynomials. There's one for every degree. So the first ones are 1 and 0. So here you see for degree 0, it's 1. And then for minus 1, it's 2, it's 0. And then you have a two-term recurrence. And that recursively defines polynomials. And HL has degree L. It's easy to see that. Because it's a two-term recurrence, there's a theory that says these polynomials are orthogonal with respect to some weight function. If you take out this weight function, so you divide it off, you get functions that are truly orthogonal without any weight function. And these are the Hermite function. And now you see that the Hermite functions are, in essence, the polynomials. But now you have this term in front of it, and you see there's this e to the minus t squared. And that just visually makes sure that these functions decay very quickly as you go to infinity. And so here are just a few examples of the first three Hermite functions. And you see that that they have a support that is the entire real line, but they decay very quickly because of this e to the minus t square. And here you see a little bit, you know, there's could argue some similarity to these QRS complexes. That's why people studied this. And so here's the orthogonality condition. They are exactly orthogonal on the real line, but because they decay so quickly, you can, in essence, assign to them an interval of support and say they are orthogonal on that interval, approximately, just because they are very close to zero outside of it. And you see there's also this magic factor, this magic parameter sigma, and that just stretches, allows you to stretch these functions, and that maintains the orthogonality, of course. So the previous work used these Hermite functions to express these QRS complexes because of, and as I said before, it was because of visual similarity, and the algorithm worked as follows. You have a QRS complex, so that one has a certain support, so first you stretch the Hermite functions, they have the same support. Then you pick the first, I don't know, however many you want, 15, 17 Hermite functions, and you project your QRS complex onto them by just computing a scalar product because they're orthogonal. So you compute these CL coefficients. And the more of those you have, the better you represent your signal. That's the idea. And then you keep the first so many, 15, let's say. You stop somewhere because you don't want to have infinitely many. And that's what you store. And then if you want to reconstruct, you take these 15 coefficients out of your database, and here's the reconstruction formula. And you get an approximation of the original signal. So that was the approach taken. Now, there's a problem. If you want to implement this here in this stage, you have to compute these integrals. And in a computer, you cannot do that, right? You have to discretize somehow. So they went on and discretized it. And if you discretize an integral, you use a quadrature rule. And so here they picked a standard one out of a book. And this is the quadrature rule. And in essence, what you do is you sample your function at certain points, and then you multiply it by the length of intervals. Or to see that visually, you have the interval of support, and here I normalized it from minus 1 to 1. You divide it, in this case, into, I chose 7, just randomly, into 7 intervals, and now you have to pick one sampling location in each of these intervals, and what they did, naturally, they chose an equi-spaced sampling because it's just a natural thing to do. And then, in essence, this is the computation you perform. You have your samples at these equi-spaced points, and then you have this you multiply by this transform matrix, and you see these are the Hermite polynomials evaluated at equidistant points. And if you want to reconstruct, and you get the coefficients. And if you want to reconstruct, you have to use the inverse transform. And that's fine, but there were a few problems with the approach. The first is this transform is not orthogonal. And typically we like to have orthogonal transforms for a variety of reasons in signal processing. And then for this kind of transform, there is not really a very efficient algorithm. So in other words, it's kind of really becomes an, you have to do it by definition, and that can be very expensive. So we built on this approach, but changed something. Namely, we changed the sampling points. Because the theory of orthogonal polynomial suggests or explains that if you sample, the equispaced are not the natural sampling points. But in fact, the sampling points are the roots. The proper sampling points should be the roots of the nth Hermite polynomial. So in our case 7, here again, the case of 7, you divide into 7 subintervals. You do not want to sample at these equispaced points, but you want to pick the 7th Hermite polynomial, pick its zeros, and these are sort of mathematically the natural sampling points. And that's why we got interested to see whether if these are the natural sampling points, whether we can also get better results. And so you see this is here. You see it's not equispaced anymore. And now you have a slightly different version of transform and reconstruction. So the transform, here are the sampling points. They are now not equispaced. And now the transform looks like this. And these are, in essence, the zeros of the nth polynomial. And the theory of Hermite polynomials tells us now that this transform is orthogonal, so if you want to reconstruct, you can do it with the transpose. So it's orthogonal, and the second part is that actually it's known that for these transforms you have fast algorithms. So to test test this approach, we for the ICAST paper that I'm presenting here, we took ran a relatively small experiment taking 29 QRS complexes from three different ECG signals. And then we computed the compression abilities, and we compared to the previous Hermite approach, and then we threw in also the DFT and DCT because these are the more natural candidates when you compress. So in essence, DCT-based compression, just like in image processing. You do a DCT transform, you keep only the first five or six coefficients, and that we tried that also. And here are the results. And on the x-axis, you see how many coefficients we kept. And because one QRS complex has 27 samples in this particular example, if you do a transform and then you keep all the 27 coefficients, you get perfect reconstruction, zero error. On the y-axis is the error. And the fewer coefficients you keep, the larger is the error naturally. And now you get these Pareto fronts, sort of these curves, and then depending on the error, you can choose how many coefficients you keep. And every line is a different algorithm, and our new one is the red one. Now the question is, what error can you tolerate? And after the ICAS paper, we started talking to a cardiologist, and we had the cardiologist go over reconstructed signals, and in essence, the result was that 10% is good, and more is not good. So in essence, you want to cut here. And then you see that for 10% here, the red one is a bit better than the previous one. So if you quantify that, it's a gain about 15 to 20%, and the compression ratio that we achieve is a factor of 5. So you transform, and because you store only like 5 coefficients, before you have 27, roughly a factor of 5. And here's a visual confirmation that 10% is reasonable and 20% not. So the black line is a QRS complex as obtained as in the database, and the red one is a reconstructed one with 10% error, and the blue one is with 20% error. And you see the blue one is already quite different. But really, the gold standard is not a picture like this, but what a real practitioner would say. So after the IPCAS paper, we continued with a larger experiment where I want to briefly show the results, because 29 QRS complexes is a relatively small sample. So we went into that MIT database, and we picked now 168 leads, so 168 ECG signals, and we took out 1,500 of these complexes. And then we also compared to the wavelet transform, because that's also a natural candidate for compression. And here are the results. And you see that we have here different errors. And because we already established that more than 10% is not really acceptable, you only need really to look at 10% error. And you see here the new algorithm, which is a minor modification of the one from this ICAS paper, in essence the same one. This is the previous one, DFT-based, DCT-based, and DWT-based. And you see here always two numbers. So the first number is the compression ratio, by what factor could you compress the data. And you see that also in this large-scale experiment, we get about a factor of 5. So that's the fold reduction of the amount of data. And the previous algorithm actually on this larger data set performed worse than on that smaller one. So the smaller one was apparently nice for this previous algorithm. So now here the compression ratio is only 3.5. So that's sort of an improvement of 50%, let's say. And it turns out actually that the DFT, DCT, and DWT compressions, they're also reasonable candidates. Actually, some perform better than the Hermite-based one, but they're all like in the range around 4. So here, it's really better. And here what you see in the parenthesis is how many coefficients you need to keep. So if you have a higher compression ratio, you only need to keep few coefficients. If you have a lower one, you need to keep more coefficients. So the method seems to work. Okay, so my conclusion, I showed a method for the compression of QRS complexes using discretized Hermite functions. And it's really, you could argue, only a small sort of incremental step from the prior work, which already used continuous Hermite function, then using the quadrature rule. But what's really interesting here, arguably, is that non-equidistant sampling performs better than equidistant sampling. And that's kind of nice, because the mathematics of these Hermite functions suggests these as natural sampling points. Right? These functions just have those points as natural sampling points. And that's actually the reason why we studied the problem, because we studied actually approaches to signal processing based on orthogonal polynomials, and then we were looking for applications, and this is one of the applications we found. So the interesting thing is really that non-equidistant sampling here can make sense. So if you, in other words, if you deployed this into a real-world application, maybe you would immediately sample those ECG signals at those points rather than equidistantly, as it's of course done right now, and so we needed actually to interpolate to find the values at these other points. And compared to the previous methods and also to compare to reasonable other candidates based on wavelets and cosine transforms, we achieve improved compression rates of like 20 to 40% on a larger scale experiment. And there's some obvious future works one can do, and some of these things we have been doing in the last weeks, like, you know, better adjusting the stretch factor, because there you can still do some more fine-tuning. There's a question of efficient implementations, and we also have some results on having faster algorithms for this Hermite transform. And then, of course, the question is, can you use a similar approach to the other segments of the ECG signal? So not the QRS complex, but the other components. And that concludes my talk. Thank you very much.
What's your criterion for choosing the sigma at this point? I know you said you were working on it still, but how are you choosing that sigma for the tuning?
How we choose the sigma is that, in essence, if you look at the support of the QRS complex, so the sigma depends on the support, or it's related to the support. And so what Alexei did, he looked at the interval of support of the QRS signal, and that narrows down the choices of sigma very much to like a small interval. And then in there, he just does a little bit of trial and error. And because typically you only need to do that once for a lead, and then you can keep the same sigma for your entire lead of QRS complexes, which means you can actually invest computation time to really fine-tune it. You will not penalize for it. So no, it's not a terribly sophisticated approach, but let's say it works in practice.
What are the instances where you sample? I mean, do you get those instances from the Hermite functions, or how is the non-uniform sampling? I mean, what are those sampling instances?
The sampling points, if you want, let's say if the QRS complex has 27 samples, and so in the beginning you would assume then you take the first 27 Hermite polynomials, meaning from Hermite functions from number 0 to number 26, then the sampling points are the zeros of the 27th one. Okay, and that seems like a weird random choice, but if you study mathematical books on orthogonal polynomials, then they explain to you that if you choose, this is a general thing of orthogonal polynomials, that if you use this approach to choosing the sampling points, the transform will become orthogonal. Okay, that doesn't necessarily say that it would perform better for compression, but it turned out that actually it happens. But that's the approach.
I have a question. When you were showing the curves with the error, it looked like up until 15 coefficients, the DFT and DCT were performing a bit better than the Hermite, and then there is a change.
Yes.
Why is it that with more coefficients they perform better, perform less?
We have no insight here. It's really, I think this is something that you can only find out empirically, because the QRS complex clearly has a particular shape, and the question is the basis function that corresponds to these particular transforms, which can approximate this shape better. No insight. So there's no nice biological model of the heart, let's say, that would explain to you why, what function is the natural one. So we have absolutely no insight. It's empirical. In fact, it was a surprise to us that in many cases that just using the DCT was better than the previous method on Hermite functions, and maybe the authors didn't try it. Right. Okay, no problem. Interesting sounds.
Any other questions?